I'm Dr. Leif Tappanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History. I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho. This is The Nature of Idaho. Coming from the 1B, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today, our guest is Ryan Hardy, Principal Fishery Research Biologist for the Panhandle of Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and we'll be talking about the fishery recovery program on the Kootenai River, which is tasked with the endangered Kootenai River white sturgeon, burbot, and other native fish species that have been impacted by land use practices.
This is, again, another great episode. When I first got here in Pocatello at Zoo Idaho, you know, we're an indigenous zoo, and we were looking for various endangered species across Idaho, and the Kootenai River white sturgeon was one of the very first animals that showed up.
Very cool. And sturgeon, we'll get into this, but they're just a really interesting ancient animal and one that's everybody's impressed by when they first have a look at one. So we'll get into that in a moment. But first, you want to talk to us?
We've got some nature news to talk about. So we've got the 12-gram black pole warbler. 12 grams is basic, is a bird,
okay.
And 12 grams is 12 BBs. You know, just think of 12 little BBs. And this warbler, when it's migrating, will travel over 20,000 kilometers. For those of us in the United States, that's 12,430 miles. Wow. And they're migrating from these western boreal forests of North America. This is up in Alaska and Canada, and they're going all the way down to the Amazon basin. They follow what they call a great circle route. They cross northern Canada and then end up in Maine and go along the eastern coast of the United States, flying over the Atlantic Ocean and then landing in the Amazon basin to overwinter. And what's interesting but also not necessarily great news is that the black pole warbler is one of the fastest declining songbird species in the Western Hemisphere. And they're finally, you know, conservationists, zoologists, biologists, et cetera, are finally understanding the migratory path of these birds. And this hopefully can start giving them clues as to why these birds are declining so fast.
That's amazing. These tiny birds, by any stretch, right? A little bird is figuring out a way to get all the way, halfway, a little more than halfway across the world. That's fantastic.
It's insane. They're starting in the northern hemisphere and ending up in the southern hemisphere. And they're crossing part of the Atlantic Ocean to boot.
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. And, you know, I read recently that scientists are starting to get a little sense of how migratory birds are actually able to use sort of an internal compass to find their way around. And that's been a great mystery, too. Maybe we'll touch on in a future show. There's so much to learn about not just birds, but just how nature works and how these little animals can figure out their way and do what seems like an impossible task, given their body size and
without Google Maps.
Without Google Maps, I'm kind of lost without it. Well, you know, it's trivia time here, and today on our show we're going to be talking about some river fish, and in particular we're going to talk about the white sturgeon. So our trivia question is: what is the maximum weight on record for a white sturgeon? And you're going to not believe how big this thing can get. But we'll get to that and more about the Kootenai River right after this break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Well, welcome back to The Nature of Idaho. Ryan is here. I want to welcome him and ask him more about what he does. Thank you all for joining us back here at Nature of Idaho. So, Ryan, can you tell us about the Kootenai River? Where is it? And what's it like to be on that river?
Well, it's definitely a neat thing to be able to study such a large river, and it's very diverse. It starts, the Kootenai drainage starts in northeastern British Columbia. It's a very large drainage. It flows south into Montana, where it's then impounded by Libby Dam and forms Lake Koocanusa. And then it turns west and flows through the Idaho Panhandle. And then, interestingly enough, it then curves and turns north and goes back into Canada and forms Kootenai Lake. And then it then turns again and flows to meet the Columbia River at Castlegar, British Columbia. So quite a large river.
That's, yeah, so is it, I have not been on this river myself. Is it a wide one? What does it have white water on it? Is it a fast-moving river?
It's a really large river. In the headwaters, it has white water, but it's more of a slow meandering river. About when it hits Bonner's Ferry in Idaho, and so it's, you know, probably a couple hundred yards wide at its widest point, and but in its headwaters up towards the Idaho-Montana border, it can get pretty narrow and have some pretty fast-moving water, and that also holds different fish species than down below in the wider parts of the river.
Yeah, so you mentioned fish species. So what kinds of fish are swimming around, I guess, in the Idaho stretch of that river?
Native fish species, of course, you have Kootenai River white sturgeon. That's the endangered species in the river. Burbot in the Kootenai River. The Kootenai is the only place in Idaho where burbot are native. And so we have burbot, whitefish, red band trout, rainbow trout, bull trout, pea mouth, large scale suckers, another probably 5 or 10 different species of native fish in the basin.
So back in 1994, the white sturgeon was listed as endangered along the Kootenai River. Is it for the whole river? Is it a section, certain sections along the river? And once the white sturgeon was listed, what did that mean for the Kootenai River and conservation?
So, yeah, the Kootenai River, is just as far as back up to why it was listed, the Kootenai River white sturgeon have faced many obstacles fairly, I guess, recently. The two biggest were Libby Dam's construction in Montana, as well as the diking and channelization of the river for agricultural purposes. The ESA listing is for Kootenai River white sturgeon, and that applies to the U.S. section from the Canadian border up to its furthest habitat that it's known to exist, which is in Montana. Critical spawning habitat is in the Idaho section, and so that's all protected habitat. And as far as what it means for white sturgeon and conservation in the future, it definitely, as far as leveraging funds for mitigation, it helped have the ability to do some of these bigger programs to try to restore the population. We do collaborative work with the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho, and the Kootenai Tribe is also funded to do aquaculture and habitat work to increase recruitment of white sturgeon as well.
So white sturgeon, they're pretty unique fish. They're ancient. They look amazing. They've got these massive spines kind of on their back. Can you describe a little bit about a white sturgeon? And then, you know, we've burbots too. That's kind of a unique fish too. Can you kind of throw in some description of a burbot as well?
Sure. White sturgeon, they, at least in the Kootenai River, the adults will mature around 15 to 20 years old. So when they come up and they spawn in the river, in the Kootenai River above Kootenai Lake, and then they go back down into the lake and reside in the lake. And so their their larvae and their juveniles are in the river to rear for a certain period of time, and then they live in the river for a certain period of time until they get mature enough, and then they start doing spawning migrations. They can grow very large. I think the largest one that we've seen is around 9 feet, 10 feet long, and they can grow to ages well over 100 years old.
Really?
And
wow.
Yep. And for an adult, typically once they hit maturity, they spawn every 4 years. So it takes about 4 years for their eggs to mature. And males sometimes will spawn every year or every other year, and females, it's about every 4 years. And so we'll see those fish in the river come back every 4 years to spawn.
So what we're looking at is by the age of 20, a female will have spawned twice.
Well, so a female starts spawning about 20 in the Kootenai, and then from then on, that's when you'll see them every 4 years.
Now, what I remember about sturgeon when I've seen them is their mouths are sort of located on the underside of mm-hmm. the body, right? And they're bottom-dwelling fish, is that right? So what are they eating, and how do they... I guess, how do they exist in their environment? How do they relate to their environment?
So they have what we call a subterminal mouth, and they have barbels on their, like little whiskers, like catfish whiskers, yeah. And they can feel the bottom, and they basically eat, they're omnivores, so they'll eat snails, they'll eat dead fish that are on the bottom, and just basically anything that has caloric value. We do see that a lot of these fish will eat freshwater mussels and snails, as well as benthic macroinvertebrates, insects. And so they're just making a living in the lower part of the river. A lot of times they'll also follow, for example, when we have kokanee that come up into the lower part of the river for spawning, you'll see a lot of the adults coming up into the lower part of the river following those fish, just basically following their food source.
Now, burbot's another fish that swims in these waters. Can you paint a picture of what a burbot is like?
Yeah, a burbot is a freshwater cod. They're a very unique fish. They grow to about probably, I think the largest one that we saw was about 13 pounds in the river and maybe about 35 inches in length. And they are neat because they have a lot of different colorations. They're kind of light to dark green, and we call it vermiculations, just these patterns that are on the fish make it really unique looking in the environment. And the one big unique thing about burbot is they're active in the wintertime when most fish are not. So if you'll see, for example, a rainbow trout will be very active in the summertime, and then in the wintertime they go to deep pools and they just basically hunker down and overwinter. Well, a burbot is completely opposite. They are active in the wintertime, and so they capitalize on fish. They eat fish that are winter mode, where they're not moving around very much. So it's an adaptation only known to burbot, at least in this part of the world.
So we're sitting here in the Kootenai River with two very unique species of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have started working on some conservation projects within there, or you have been working on these projects. Did it start with a primary focus on the white sturgeon, and then you've moved into more fish or more holistic approach? What are you guys doing up there really to help preserve and conserve this unique environment, not only with the river, but the fish and the critters around the river?
Yeah, I think, you know, the program itself started in the late 1980s, and about the exact same time that the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho started their project as well, which was funded through Bonneville Power to recover white sturgeon. And so they were more into trying to, their focus was to try to recover sturgeon through aquaculture. And our focus was also to try to evaluate the hatchery and stocking practices, as well as try to identify limiting factors that could possibly lead us to means to actual recovery of wild recruitment as well. And so over the years, the tribe and Fish and Game have become very close collaborators, on, as well as Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks in British Columbia, BC Ministry, coming together to try to find out how we could all share common goals to try to get this this species, as well as other fish species, recovered in the basin. And so we started really moving into a holistic approach to try to see that it's not just single species management in some of these areas. Some of them, it's a much bigger ecosystem thing that we need to start looking at. And so we moved into doing a few other things. The tribe got funding to do nutrient restoration in the river. And so since 2005, we helped manage the addition of liquid phosphorus and nitrogen in the river that actually boosts food production, and that has helped a lot of different fish species, not just burbot and sturgeon. So trying to get that more holistic approach has basically taken over in the last 10 years, as well as some of the single species approaches, trying to help flow management to get sturgeon to spawn in better locations.
Yeah, it sounds like could be a potential real challenge, given the course that the river takes, as you described at the top of our interview, originating, you know, on the Canadian side from BC, flowing into Montana through a little portion of Idaho back into Canada. The number of stakeholders, jurisdictions, federal, state, and mm-hmm. tribal stakeholders being able to come together to collaborate for a common set of goals must pose some challenges, but also lend some new opportunities, really, to expand the resources that you have to make it work.
Definitely, yep. I think we all had to come together and try to find common ground that we all want each of these species recovered. We certainly have different missions. They overlap, certainly, but we, as a state agency, would like to also see the benefit to the public, being able to open these fisheries again one day. And so that is one thing that we've worked hard to do, is just be very close collaborators with our neighbors, and that's where we can move the needle farther on recovery. Especially with burbot, in 2005, we started the tribe actually initiated a Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative that had several different stakeholders, federal, state, and private entities come together and try to identify how to best tackle the burbot recovery issue. And so out of that came a conservation strategy that we have been basically following for the last, 12 or 15 years. And so those are the things that have really moved the needle, and that is just being able to come together and find common ground. We haven't always agreed on certain things, but we've the core value of trying to recover this species and what it will take, we all signed on to, for sure.
And I just want people to kind of realize, with when it comes down to a lot of these conservation projects and concerns, we go back to the life history of the sturgeon and just how long-lived it is. and how long it takes for them to breed and reproduce. This is not a project that's going to be done in the next 5 years or in the next 20 years, because the recovery process, especially with the sturgeon, it takes time. And so not only are you looking at the right now, but you're also looking towards the future. And what are some of the steps that you're trying to put in place now for 20, 30 years later?
Yeah. So one of the big things that is that adults are facing is, or Kootenai River white sturgeon adults are facing, is that they are currently spawning in locations that are unproductive. So they spawn over mud substrate, and we certainly have researched why they do this, and we haven't come up with a great answer of exactly why they're spawning over this substrate. But what we have come up with is try to figure out how to get them to move up into the type of substrates where they spawn and actual get very good recruitment with the eggs and larvae, and it increases hatching success. And so we've just recently worked on doing a lot of our tracking analysis, and showed, and we track these fish with sonic tags. The adults are implanted with sonic tags, and we have receivers in the river, and we're able to determine where their location is at in the river. And what we do is we associate their movements with different operations at the dam, either a high or low flow or extended periods or what have you. And so we've determined how to actually move more adults above Bonner's Ferry into proper spawning habitats and get them to stay up there. And so this is the kind of things that we're doing, is try to evaluate, okay, how can we keep these this wild recruitment going, not just now, but into the future for generations to come.
How is the location of the dam and how it's structured? How do the sturgeon pass through or around dam structures at different life stages? I guess, are they blocked entirely, or are there certain ways in which they're able to move through?
So the Kootenai white sturgeon is pretty unique in that it has been isolated for the past 10,000 years from the Columbia River. It was between, Bonington Falls is a natural barrier at Castlegar, British Columbia, and then you go all the way up through Kootenai Lake and up to the Kootenai Falls. And Kootenai Falls is in Montana, and it's just below Libby Dam. And those are barriers, natural barriers, that keep them from actually going up to the dams. So the good thing is we don't have to worry about fish passage with our adults or larvae at all. So everything should be occurring between the two dam systems. The issue is that the dam has actually changed this system to where now we have about four times lower spring flows, and it just reduces the cues for getting these fish into proper spawning habitat.
And I imagine, too, with the reduced flow rate, you're affecting the river edges, too. So the riparian edges are changing. And again, it's just not one single or two factors affecting the sturgeon or the burbot or all the fish and wildlife in the area. You've got multiple factors rolling in that you have to consider.
Yeah, historically, the river actually just used to go over the banks and go into the floodplains. And that what occurred is and when Libby Dam went in, is that it was primarily there for flood control and secondarily for hydropower. To reduce the flows and reduce that flooding potential, that was the main operation objective. But then also prior to that, the river was diked and channelized and the riparian areas drained for agricultural purposes. And so that reduced the amount of zooplankton and food production that comes off of those wetlands. and it also reduced the access to the floodplain, which a lot of the larvae, once they are spawned and hatched, they would go out into the floodplain and feed. And then as those would reduce and decline, that's when the larva would go back into the river. And so you just don't see the river functioning like it used to be. And I think that is one thing that the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho is working to try to get more of that back. And we're evaluating some of their habitat work, improvement work that they're doing to try to get more access to those floodplain habitats.
Well, this is a really interesting topic, and I really appreciate you spending time to talk with our listeners and us about it. There's one outstanding thing that we have to get to, of course, which is our trivia question. And this deals with the maximum weight on record. Hopefully no fishtail here. The maximum weight on record that we could find for a white sturgeon. Could you tell our listeners what that size is?
Yep, the maximum weight known was 816 kilograms, which is about 1,800 pounds. And that was a reported age of 104 years old.
Wow.
These are amazing fish, aren't they?
That's a beast.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. We'd like to thank Ryan Hardy from Idaho Fish and Game for joining us today to learn more about the Kootenai River Conservation Projects. Visit idfg.idaho.gov and specifically look in Region 1, the Panhandle.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ryan. Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at kisu.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock, and please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.